Welcome to the Flame Podcast, spreading truth like wildfire with your flamethrowers Anna Kane and Nicole Orozco on a mission to set the captives free. Now here they are, your hosts.
Well, hello, everybody. We have a great show lined up for you. So for more information about the Flame Podcast on the Flame newspaper, please visit us at theflameusa.com. My name is Nicole Orozco.
And I'm Anna Kane.
And we are your hosts today. Some people just want to make sure who's who with Anna and Nicole. So here you go. You can subscribe to our full show at podomatic.com, Spotify, and other places podcasts can be heard. We can also be found on Rumble under the Flame USA. So make sure to check us out there so you won't miss a single episode. So we're starting out the show again with Watchmen on the Wall. We do cover the latest events and happenings. So this week coming up, it's Children's Health Defense. They're hosting an event in Seattle. It's today.
Today, yeah.
Yeah, you might not see it. So it's at 401 Pine Street, 9 to 4. But there is one in also on April 19th, and that's the one that you could catch in Spokane. And that's at 12929 East Spring Avenue, 8 to 6 p.m., and speakers start at 4. They're Dr. Paul Thomas, Dr. Scott Jensen, Dr. Kelly Victory, and Dr. Jason Kinley. And we did have a telethon. Check it out on The Flame. It was really good. We had so many people. So check that out. Go down, scroll down if you're on Rumble, and check out the telethon. And you know, that's for donations, because for us to keep this going, keep our families going, keep the paper going, keep the other paper going, keep the everything, and give our lives to this thing, we have to be able to support it, and we have to still eat. So, you know, and we want to grow. So there you go. Go to theflameusa.com and donate and check out the telethon. Now, we are also going to be at General Flynn's movie next week. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in Bow, and it is on, it's next Wednesday, and it starts at 4, I believe, and it's at Cowboy Church. So go to flynnmovie.com, and you could get your tickets there. So that is super exciting as well. I can't wait to see that movie.
Yeah, me neither.
Cowboy Church. What's Cowboy Church?
Cowboy Church is this church in Bow, and it's like in a rodeo arena, kind of like, and they have a church service there.
Cool.
And so we were privileged to find that event for General Flynn.
Yeah, we found the venue, which crazy, though, is I've heard so much about Cowboy Church, and I've never actually been able to attend. So I'm super excited to do that, just because I know through the past few years, they definitely stayed open. Cool. When churches were told to close. So I'm excited to see the venue, meet the pastor, and hang out with General Flynn, watch the movie. It's crazy, because the other times that we've been able to preview movies before they come out, in order so we can, you know, push them and talk to people about them and get tickets sold. And this movie must be something, because they are just keeping it on.
They're holding it. It's a premiere. So. The one thing, I don't want to go a bunch into the affiliates and go here and go there, but the LifeWave patch I forgot to put on today.
Oh, I have mine on. Welcome back, Anna.
I'm so excited
to be back. It's been like 2 weeks. I was in Hawaii and I came back, and I don't know what the heck is going on in Washington State, but my allergies are up, and the patch was like the first thing this morning. I'm like, where is my patch? I need my patch.
Yeah, so this thing is phenomenal. It works through photo. What do you call it?
Light waves, right?
Well, no, it's for your stem cells.
Yeah.
Through
photosynthesis.
Yeah. I can't even say that word.
You put this sucker on, and it's like it changes you. I can't explain it. So you could go to lifewave.com/theflame. That's lifewave.com/theflame. I would try it. It has changed my life, literally.
Sure. It's helped you out with your back, hasn't it?
It's helped me out mentally, physically, spiritually. I can't even describe the difference in energy that I have. I have to remember to take it off or I have too much energy. Mm-hmm. And it has allowed me to, I feel the difference if I don't wear it. And so it's been something, and it's helped me out with a lot. I can't even tell you, because it's like being a different person.
Right.
You know, literally. So that being said, we have Steve today.
Well, today I thought I would do something a little different, and that is to give you a little bit of an up, some motivational stuff here. And it says this: I know what I want, and I'm committed to getting it. And this is about setting goals. This is about achieving things. And people, what you don't know is these two gals are high achievers. They work their tails off. Now they run two different papers. And two different papers, paper papers, not just online papers, but real pen. And they got printers. They got people that are they have to distribute it. And there are for the Mill Creek View paper now that Nicole's taken over, they have actual kids that go out and deliver them. And my boy used to deliver our local one here in Linwood. So I want people to know that these are two gals that really are doers. And it says this: I know what I want, and I'm committed to getting it. And if I don't know, I will devote time and energy to figuring it out. I am so focused on my vision that I don't get distracted or scattered by irrelevant, draining, or conflicting tasks. I am willing to experience whatever it takes, defeat, embarrassment, even humiliation, to achieve what I want. I am always doing things that I've never done before and or don't want to do. I make at least one unreasonable request of myself a week or of somebody else. I don't say yes when I really want to say no, even if it means rocking the boat or upsetting another. I regularly seek out support and refuse to spend time or discuss my dream with naysayers, even if they're related to me. Mm-hmm. Every time I'm afraid to do something, I force myself to do it anyway. And I catch myself when I try to justify not doing it. I am rigorous about the thoughts that I think and the words that I use, making sure they're positive, supportive, and appreciative of myself and others. And finally, I take time to relax and pamper myself so I don't burn out. And that's from the Maven. I forget her actual name, but she wrote a lot of things in business magazines. I myself have applied that to my life for decades. Running my own business, I have to motivate myself because no one else is going to do it. I remember talking to Craig Vetter, who invented the fairing. He said, Steve, no one's more passionate about your business than you are. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be the number one cheerleader for your business. You've got to be the number one, go out and do it, because no one else cares more than you do. And so, folks, apply that to your life. Take these little things, maybe rewind this section and listen to it. And if it's about changing your physical health, your relationships, starting a business, or doing a better job on your in your employment, whatever it is, apply these things. Because, to be honest, life is short. And if we don't make the most of it and we don't do the best we can with it, we're going to regret it. So that's my little thought for today.
I kind of love that. And, you know, this week, besides the Google calendar, which is insane, I've been plugging everything, even when to go pee, you know, into it.
I get it.
Yeah.
But she does. And she put it under our business which calendar. I know everything she's doing now.
Yeah, she does. And that's important, I think, that she knows, because then she knows what
not to contact.
Yeah.
These
or whatever.
Yep.
But the thing is at night I've been doing a lot of listening to different videos. And one, it's a little metaphysical, but he's good. It's Richard Dotz. I don't even know where it came from. It's like old and it's talking in AI. But the one thing it's about, it's literally about watching your mind. And the reason I like him is he doesn't get too into spiritual good.
Right.
But it's literally about watching your feeling.
Yes.
And about watching your mind. And I think about having the mind of Christ with that.
Yes.
And I notice that there's a lot of offense in my mind. And I will wake up offended and nobody even did anything. And it's a pattern. It's some programming I got in the past. So, and you don't judge yourself during this. So you're just being aware of your own thoughts at all times and your own patterns at all times. So you could just drop them. Because when you drop them, then you have a whole new slate. Like I would write a book called The Clean Slate, because literally your life is like a canvas. And if you have a clean slate, you could write on it. But if you have old programming, Tony Robbins talked a lot about that. Mm-hmm. If you have old programming, then it's hard to get that slate clean and redo it. Yep. And so no matter how good we get at this stuff, or how motivated we are at doing a business, every day we should be learning and applying what Steve just said. So that's Amen. The way I see it. So with that being said, our goal for the Flame podcast is to make it a top performer within the political podcast category. And we do need your help to do this. So it is as simple as sharing this show with 10 of your friends. Just do it. Share it with 10 of your friends. And speaking of sharing, we do have a great guest lined up for you, so stay tuned.
Did you know that there is a community of human beings that live to be well over 100 years old? It's true. The Hunza people live to be anywhere between 120 to 140 years old. Their secret? Vitamin B17. At Richardson Nutrition Center, founder John Richardson and his family have made it their mission to add vitamin B17 back into the human diet. Vitamin B17 is found in over 1,200 foods in nature and has been gradually eliminated from the human diet throughout the past 100 years. Over the past 20 years, our products have helped customers with immune support, energy, heart health, and much more. At Richardson Nutrition Center, we have developed a product line to easily incorporate B17 back into your diet.
Welcome to our Torchbearer segment, where we interview people who are carrying the torch of truth and making a positive difference in our world. But before we talk with our guests, I want to remind everyone to visit theflameusa.com, where you can find out more information about the Flame podcast and the Flame paper. A big shout out to our Rumble fans. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you are liking and subscribing and sharing. That's how we get more information out. And it allows us to also have the financial backing to continue to do this podcast. Today, we are super excited to welcome back Nate Kane, Yay. Who is running for Congress in West Virginia. Nate, thank you for coming back and meeting with us again. And your bio is so long. You've done so many things. And so when I was going through it, I'm like, but they're all important. How do I, you know, take things out? And so I want to give you the opportunity to go ahead and introduce yourself and share the things that you think are most important for people to know about you.
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I do these political events where I'm given like 3 minutes and I'm like, I can't even get through, you know, a tenth of, you know, my bio with 3 minutes,
but take five.
I'll do my best. So I have gotten good at it. Bottom line is I am a U.S. Army veteran. I also served with the United States Navy and the Marine Corps, as well as a civilian. And I've worked for NSA, for the VA, for DIA, DISA, and DEA. And so I've done a lot of work. And then I also worked for FBI as a FBI contractor. And while I was there, this was about 6 years ago, I was became the very first federal whistleblower ever to use the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act with the Department of Justice to blow the whistle on the FBI's cover-up of Hillary Clinton's crimes related to Uranium One. And money laundering, public corruption, terrorism financing. That was not fun, but you know, it was one of those things where you get put in that position, and And, you know, you have to do the right thing. And I feel like I did that. I've also, after that, I worked on election integrity work for the Trump White House, providing information in related to investigations into election integrity directly to Peter Navarro and his team. And then I also worked with the Amistad Project on election integrity. I was an expert witness in 7 cases, including the one that went to the Supreme Court, and as well as Maricopa County, amongst others. And then I was hired by Judge Gableman, who was the IG for the Office of Inspector General for the Wisconsin State Legislature. He was looking into election integrity in Wisconsin. And so I did some work for him as well. after all of that, I ended up having an opportunity. Well, basically, I started my own company in cybersecurity shortly before that. But I ended up really kind of going big with my company and taking on my first contract. And so I ended up getting hired. Harry Howery, he was somebody who I worked with in election integrity, and we became pretty close friends. And so he reached out to me in regards to a case that he was dealing with, where he was an expert witness with a grand jury in Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office Bureau of Investigation. It went through the LA County, and he asked me if I could help him do some validation work for data that LA County was looking at. This was data that True the Vote, Catherine Engelbrick, and Greg Phillips had produced and exposed. And so we went through and we looked at their data and validated that it was plausible. You know, in that we saw indicators, you know, of Chinese IP addresses interfacing with certain Konich owned domain names. And I don't really want to get too much into the details of that, other than just to say that these things were revealed in the grand jury, and it ultimately resulted in a arrest warrant for Eugene Yu, the CEO of Konich, a Michigan-based company that produces a software called Polchief, and it is an election management software that is used in multiple counties across the United States, some very big ones, in fact. And it manages poll workers, payroll, all those types of things, hiring. It also manages other data, such as all of the you know, records pertinent to voting in an election that are required to be maintained for 2 years following a federal election. So it connects and interfaces with the election system in multiple ways. One of those ways is through an API directly into the voter registration system, where it validates people who are applying for jobs, you know, as poll workers. So none of that is unusual, what the indictment, or I should say what the indictment was regarding, or what the search warrant was regarding, was to look for evidence that Polchief was basically, or Konich was basically, sending PII data. This is personally identifiable information, you know, on voters, on poll workers, on election judges, and on systems inventory to China, and storing that information on Chinese servers. It was also to look for the possibility that their development software, their software development work, might not be being done in LA or in the United States, but done overseas. So that is basically kind of where this story begins, and why I'm on today is we just recently broke the story on this. But my company was hired to do this work. And what we discovered was, in fact, that there was a major breach, you know, of public data, you know, of people's, you know, personally identifiable information. And it ended up leading to indictments and to an arrest of Eugene Yu and our involvement in the collection effort of that, because we have expertise in cyber forensic capture. And so so I guess that's probably a good place to kind of stop with the intro and let you kind of take back over with some questions and stuff. But I will add one other thing.
It's kind of a good place to start, really.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Well, that's the a place good place where to we're start. Start.
Yeah.
The other, I guess, one last thing that I'll mention is that I, in 2022, kind of right at the head of all of this stuff. Like when all of this was happening, when we were involved, it was October of 2022. By November of 2022, I was praying and asking for the Lord to raise up righteous men and women to run for office. And I heard that still small voice, you know, the Lord speaking to me saying, what about you? And so, you know, through much prayer and asking the Lord for some confirmations, which he provided, I decided to, you know, to run for office. And so I'm now a candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives here in West Virginia's 2nd District. So in addition to my day job and, you know, my involvement in yet another whistleblowing story, you know, I also am campaigning and I'm running a very grassroots campaign. So it pretty much means that I am on the road, you know, pretty much most of the time doing that, you know, that important work of electioneering and getting out there and talking to the people right where they are.
Well, it's so important to, you know, to first of all, pray about what direction God is leading you, but then to act. And it seems that you are highly involved in a lot of very important information coming out. And so God is definitely using you, which is absolutely amazing. And we appreciate that you actually are brave enough to come out and speak up. There's so many people that have information that just, I guess, are scared. I don't know, because I feel like when it comes to our election systems, it really is the most important issue. It's our most important right. It's our most important situation to get right. If we're not able to vote the people that we want to run our country into office, then we don't have a country. We don't have a nation. And so I think that your work is super important. One question that I don't know, I kind of felt like maybe it was going to seem rude, but I just was thinking about it. And so I was like, I bet everybody's thinking about it. Like, what is it like to run for office when you're also fighting against voter fraud? Mm-hmm. When
that's the first thing I thought is
how
there's so much election fraud and you're running and you know about it, what's changed in the last 2 years?
Right. Yeah.
So that's a very good question. I'm actually glad that you asked it, because to be honest with you, so many people are so fed up. You know, the term now I think is blackpilled. You know, they believe that what is the point of voting? My vote doesn't count. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole country's, you know, gone to hell in a handbasket. And so I'm just going to go live in my corner of my universe and just try to eke out a living and, you know, and live a quiet life. Look, there's nothing wrong with that. I respect those people who choose to do that. I get it. You know, to be honest with you, if I wasn't called to do this, there's no way I would be doing this. But there's a few things at hand. One, I don't believe that the Democrats are going to be able to pull off another 2020 steal. You know, I don't think that they're going to be able to do what they did in 2020. The reason that was so successful, and regardless of what people think about the electronic voting, you know, machines, I mean, I have my doubts about them too, but I was extensively involved in election integrity efforts, you know, after 2020 in investigation. And I will tell you, the majority of the election was stolen, not by the electronic voting machines, but by ballot stuffing. It was done on a scale like nothing we'd ever seen because of these you know, these drop boxes, and because of rules that were allowed for massive mail-in ballot, ballot mail-ins, right? So, was there, you know, stuff that went on with the machines? Absolutely. Was there stuff that was enough to change the outcome of the presidential election? I don't know, because largely nobody was allowed to even look at or examine the machines, and that's the truth. You know, those machines may be completely, you know, faulty, but the truth is, until we have, you know, eyes on to be able to examine them and, you know, and be able to look at them and look at the code and look at everything else. And I don't think anybody has been able to do that. So only the courts can allow for that. And so far, the courts have not been helpful in this matter. In fact, when I did my election integrity work as a witness for 7 cases, it was Texas, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Maricopa County, and it was also the Supreme Court case that went, you know, with all the multiple states in it. Those were all cases I was an expert witness in. Not one of those, neither 50 other cases. I think there was a total of like 57 cases that went before federal courts. Not one court in the land allowed for an evidentiary hearing. Not one.
Wow.
And when you think about that, I mean, that's a massive number of cases to completely be ignored. But the fact is the judges were unwilling to stick their necks out there to allow for the overturning of an election. They didn't want to see a repeat of the hanging chads. And I don't think they wanted to, you know, put their necks out there on the line. Probably some of those judges, you know, were corrupt already. And other ones, I think, were just weak and refused, you know, to take a look at the evidence. And maybe some of it was also lawyers that did a bad job presenting their cases. I think it was a combination of things. I think it was also the fact that you had a mixture of things that they were trying to bring up and fight. Some of it was the election, you know, machines themselves, which nobody had really any evidence of anything on the machine level because nobody could get access to them. Mm-hmm. But there was plenty to look at that had nothing to do with the machines. There was multiple instances of ballots, you know, that were had no creases in them, which how could they have been mailed if they weren't folded and put in security envelopes? There was a recent case in Georgia that went on with that, where finally a court said, you know what, yes, we will allow you to examine over 100,000 ballots whose ballot images showed they had no creases in them. And so, you know, that indicates that they might have been counterfeit ballots that were added in afterwards, you know, under the cover of darkness, not folded, never put in through an envelope, but, you know, just delivered. When they went to go examine and look at those, you know, based on a court order, it turns out the county clerk had destroyed all those ballots, which is a felony. Nobody has gone to jail that I've seen. And because the people who have to bring an indictment in that case is the Department of Justice, mm-hmm. because it's a federal law, not a state law. So, you know, we're dealing with a corrupt Department of Justice, a corrupt attorney general in Merrick Garland. He's got to be the most corrupt attorney general we've ever had in American history, as far as I'm concerned. You've got a corrupt FBI who, you know, is basically doing the bidding of Merrick Garland. They focus more of their attention on going after people related to January 6th and actually tackling election crimes. And we'll talk a little bit about that in regards to my story as well. But you also you have a system which so going back, though, to I don't want to get too far off on a bird trail, but the reason why I don't think that there will be the same level of cheating as happened in 2020 is because ultimately elections are decided on how they will run by the state legislatures. And this, many of these state legislatures have shored up, you know, a lot of the, you know, the problems that happened before. For example, West Virginia has removed over 400,000 names off of the voter rolls. Now, that's not a permanent fix, because just as easily as names can be removed off, names can be added on mm-hmm. right into the run-up on an election. And we saw that in Wisconsin, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's not uncommon for names to get added and then deleted after the election. And to me, that should always be suspicious. Why did names get added and why did names get deleted? Were the same names added, the same names that were deleted afterwards in order to hide the evidence? Mm-hmm. All of those things need to be looked at and be considered. You also have you know, a lot of states that have changed the rules in regards to mail-in ballots. In West Virginia, we've dang near outlawed it here unless you have a medical reason to not be able to be there. You have some states that have outlawed ballot harvesting. You still have other states that still allow it.
Let's talk about that, actually. I want to stop you there because I know here in Washington, it's legal. I know the RNC is pushing for people to ballot harvest because it is legal. And I know that the RNC is like, well, if the Democrats are going to do it, then the Republicans need to do it. We at least need to play their game in order to get into office to then make better reform. So what is your opinion on ballot harvesting and the RNC basically encouraging.
Washington State RNC, right?
Yeah, it's Washington State.
Well, I'm of the opinion that ballot harvesting should be illegal. But where it is legal, absolutely, Republicans have got to go door to door and do ballot harvesting. Because what we've got to understand is ballot harvesting in and of itself is not necessarily a guarantee that there's cheating going on. Mm-hmm. But it is a vector, right? It provides an opportunity for cheating to go on. And there's still a problem in where you have to validate at least the signatures. And so there's supposed to be two election judges that are supposed to do signature matching. And if they're not doing that, and we know from past experiences that oftentimes they don't do it, if there's not signature verification going on, then how can you verify that that person's even a legitimately who they say they are? Ultimately, I don't trust signature verification. I would much rather see photo ID.
For sure.
But even photo ID has problems because you go to places like California, and in California, illegal aliens can go and get a driver's license. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a driver's license and when you go to the DMV is saying to you, would you like to register to vote?
Mm-hmm. Washington has the same thing called motor voter.
Yes. So if you're an illegal alien, sure, why not? I'll sign up on there. And yeah, it may ask, are you a U.S. citizen? But, you know, the claim they can make later is, oh, I don't speak, you know, I didn't speak a good English, you know.
Yeah.
And so I didn't understand what I was signing yes to. But nonetheless, let's just say that everything goes wrong and an illegal gets registered to vote. How is an election judge going to know that they're an American citizen or not? Because all the election judge is validating is, do they have an ID? Are they, you know, on the voter registration? They don't check to see if they're an American citizen. They assume that they are because you have to make an attestation, and you can be arrested, you know, under penalty of perjury if you lie. But who actually checks these things?
No.
So there's plenty of reason to believe that illegals are voting in places like California and New York and Washington and probably Oregon and every other blue state in the country. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I advocate that, you know, we need to be spending a lot more time on educating, you know, people in, you know, the poorer communities about what they get from Democrats versus mm-hmm. what they get from Republicans. The fact is, if we can't stop them from voting because of the laws that currently exist, I don't think we should ever encourage illegals to vote. But if we can't stop them from voting, the least we can do is make sure they understand that when they vote for Democrats, they're voting for their own demise. They're voting for the demise of their children. They're voting for, you know, for things that are going to raise their taxes. They're voting for things that are going to basically, you know, put them into socialism, which is generally the very thing that drove them out of the countries that they came from to get here.
Right.
So there are a lot of problems with that. You know, ballot harvesting again, you know, they've shut it down here in West Virginia. It used to be partially available, and now I don't think it's possible to do anymore. I think there are things that can be done to ensure that we have safe and secure elections. But to be honest with you, the most important thing that we can do is to decentralize it and put it back to local counties running their own elections. When the states get involved in running the election at the state level, it adds a layer of risk. When the federal government, you know, is trying to federalize elections, not only is that not constitutional, but it will permanently allow for the federal government to cheat in elections and you know, for the Democrats.
So what's
to stay
different
in power
now
for the next, you know, what, 50
so,
years?
So why
so
do
we've
you
got
think
to
it's
resist
different
every
right now? Why do you think that they can't do what they did in 2020?
COVID. We've all woken up. You know, we've all realized that COVID was a big, you know, operation by the United States government to suppress speech, to suppress people from making money, to, you know, try to force people. It was an experiment to see how far they could push the limits. And ultimately, I think people have woken up. Yeah, there's a few people that you still driving around in their car wearing a mask by themselves. And I literally look at people like that and I go, do these people wear condoms in bed alone? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, you got some people that don't have any common sense. You're never going to be able to fix those people.
Right.
You know,
but the majority, right?
I think a lot of people, yes.
But the majority of Americans, they look back now and they realize, what? I got to take my 20th booster now? I thought you said that this, you know, was going to protect us, you know, and so people realize that these guys, you know, don't know what they're talking about, and that it was not just that they were ignorant, but that was literally it was a propaganda effort. Now, so I don't think they'll be able to pull that off again, number one. Number two, I don't believe they would be fighting so hard to indict Donald Trump on anything and everything they can possibly indict him on if they thought they were going to be able to pull off a steal like they did the last time. The reason that they are trying everything they can to keep him off the ballot is they know he is going to win. All of their internal polling is showing it. You know, I've been seeing, you know, even the mainstream media is having to admit that blacks are leaving the Democrat Party in droves. You know, that Hispanics are leaving the Democrat Party in droves. Even gay people are leaving the Democrat Party. That's why they've had to extend their reach out to the transgender community, because, you know, your run-of-the-mill, you know, gay person is like, hey, I don't like where Biden is going with this, and I don't like where our country is headed. And so you've got basically every group that is looking at looking for an alternative to the Democrat Party. And then to add in there that you have Kennedy, who, you know, JFK, who's RFK that's running, you now have another very viable candidate who I think a lot of people who can't, you know, they can't stomach the thought of voting for Trump, but they sure as hell are not going to vote for Biden. Those people will likely vote for RFK. And so I don't think there's any chance at all of Biden winning this election.
No.
But yet he's too stubborn to realize it, and he won't, you know, he's not going to step down. They're not going to, you know, unless they kill him off, there's no way that he's going to step down. He's too arrogant.
Well, even if they kill him off, the
alternative.
Double's gonna
show up. Yeah, the double will show up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Then you have a word, you know, you have Miss Word Salad up there running the country. I don't, you know, people think that, you know, that Joe Biden's dumb.
I think you missed Steve's comment. The double will show up.
Yeah, the double.
We're just laughing over here because, you know, everybody's just talking about him, you know, being a robot. So even if they kill him off, the double just comes back. They just make another one.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is that, you know, people think Joe Biden's dumb. I think he's pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
He was smart enough to put somebody who was so ludicrously idiotic as his vice president that nobody would dare kill him off because she would be president.
That's true.
Think about that. You know, he was smart.
Oh,
move.
My.
You know, and he got a twofer because he was able to virtue signal to women all around the world all around the country. Oh, look, I made a woman my VP.
Crazy. A twofer.
And
I
all
love
of
that,
it
Nate.
Still didn't That's work. Bogo. All of Bogo. It still didn't work because our country, people, Democrat, Republicans, it doesn't matter who you are, see inflation, see the crime, see the fentanyl, see the property tax, can't buy a house,
constant money going to foreign wars.
Yeah,
that we
foreign
have nothing
wars
to do.
Whatever side you are on opinion on wars, the point is people don't like it.
No.
And
that's the beauty though of RFK, because RFK Jr., if you have some Democrat that starts, you know, if you say something about, you know, Biden, their natural reaction is to start hating on Trump and talking about Trump. Just go. Mm-hmm. And an easy response to them is, that's okay. If you don't like Trump, vote for RFK Jr. But do you seriously think that this guy here is going to be, is going to make your life better? Is your life any better now than it was 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that, if they're being honest, is no.
Nope.
Unless they're an illegal alien, then their life is probably better.
My daughter works in customer service. I won't say my daughter. I'll say somebody I know. But anyway, point being is she watched so many people with food stamp cards with $4,000 or $5,000 on their cash part of their card. So they're getting paid to come here. Yes. Some they say it's because the war and this and that, but so many people have a lot of money that they're getting fed to be in America right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, anytime that you're taking money from somebody without earning it, there's always a price to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guarantee you, these people eventually they're going to figure it out. They're going to realize. And honestly, that's one of the most important things that we could do as a country to stop this illegal, immigration, you know, just uncontrolled coming into our country, well, would be to cut off all of the, you know, the assistance to people who have never paid into the system.
Yep.
You would probably have half of them return home because they wouldn't be able to survive living here because of inflation without assistance. And why should anybody who's never paid a dime into this system get any kind of assistance?
Yep.
So,
and I love them. I love them. Like, I walk through here, and this has become such a multicultural area. Mm-hmm. And at the parks or at the store where I'm at, the people are beautiful. And I love, not all of them, some are doing graffiti and, you know, but that happens with any group. But the majority of the people are beautiful and lovely, at least here where I live. And it's sad because if, you know, it's hurting them as much as us, is all I'm
well,
trying
people
to say.
Are people and people are beautiful. The reality is, though, is that we all have to work in order to care for ourselves.
That's
and
right.
Yes, there's times that other that we need to help people, but we shouldn't just be giving resources. Like, this is the thing. Americans are having a hard time paying for gas, a roof over their head. In our area, rent is like so high. My kids are never leaving home. They can't pay for their own food. But yet we're going to then give our tax dollars away to people who aren't working and aren't doing what they're supposed to do. That's just asinine.
You have veterans that have served this country that developed mental illness as a result of their time serving in the country, serving for this country, seeing their buddies getting blown to pieces. And because of that, many of them are homeless. You know, many of them are suffering mental illness. And, and they were being housed in hotels in New York. They kicked them out onto the street in order to make room for illegal aliens that came into this country that have never done a damn thing for it. So that's something that to me is immoral, regardless of what you think about, the people who are coming here. I have no problem with people coming here legally. Yeah. I have no problem with people who, come here poor and who want to make something of themselves. In fact, some of the greatest strengths of our country are the fact that the type of people who generally come here are people who have ingenuity and who are hardworking and who want to make something of themselves, who want freedom so that they can, But on that note, if you're a small business owner, you're getting raped by the IRS every single day. In fact, I heard a joke recently, which made a lot of sense. I was in this, cattle country, rural area of West Virginia. And this older gentleman said to me, he said, I always wondered why the IRS has service as a part of its name. I mean, literally, what service are they doing for us? And he says, until I was at my friend's dairy farm and he hired one of his neighbors to bring over the bull to service his heifers. And then I realized.
Yeah. So I want to break in here for a moment. When it comes to the immigration issue, I'm working to bring somebody on my show about immigration. The fact is, the United States attracts the people that want to make a change, that want to rise above. And then we also bring in the H-1B1s, all those things. We do a brain drain. We take all the most intelligent people from those countries, and we rob those countries of their ability to rise up. We take the guys that are willing to go across the border, do whatever it takes. We're robbing those countries of having them stay home and actually fix what's going on. So ultimately, for everybody, he was pointing out, I was watching this documentary, for every million people that come into the United States, then you can multiply that by 80,000 or whatever it was of more poverty in the countries they just left.
Yep.
It is actually, and then it causes us to go down, down, down because we can't sustain it. Mm-hmm. So everybody is being destroyed except the people in the top who use both sides as fodder to get where they want to go.
Yep.
You're right.
So this is not – you're not helping somebody by allowing them to come to this country. You're actually destroying –
You're hurting more people.
Yeah.
There was a time where the labor unions, would go down to the border and would beat illegals coming across the border because they saw them as competition directly to their wages. We look at it's a very tricky balancing act that we have here in this country. We don't have hear all these people talk about equity. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, all this nonsense. The fact is the world is not an equitable place.
No. Yep.
And unless it was, there's no point in putting into place equity here. Because what happens is, and this is like the concept of the difference between free trade and fair trade. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought globalism was going to be this great thing. It's going to create new markets for all of our stuff that we're making, except they didn't realize that China makes the same stuff and competes against us, except they use slave labor and they use child labor.
Yes.
And they have no environmental controls over anything that they make. And then they subsidize certain industries in order to create unfair competition. All of those things. The same is true with labor markets. So I'll give you an example. My daughter came to me and she said, "Dad, I want to be a lawyer." You know, she was getting ready to graduate because I want to go to law school. And I said, "Okay, all right, let's sit down, let's look, and let's take a look at what the Bureau of Labor Statistics says about attorneys." And I was shocked to find out that attorneys at that time had one of the highest numbers of unemployment of white-collar professionals. So that means you're going to go to law school, get, you know, a degree in law, you know, maybe pass the bar, and then not be able to get a job. You know, not be able to find it. And most of these guys, a lot of them were getting jobs as law clerks and didn't even pay enough, right, you know, to pay off their law degrees. So, you know, this is the problem with like women's studies and things like that. I have a sister-in-law who she got her master's degree in women's studies, couldn't find a job anywhere. You know, she's white, so good luck. And she's not transgender. You know, she's not, lesbian. She's not black. She's not, you know, all these things, you know, that would have required her to, you know, to get those extra, you know, diversity points. And, you know, she's white, blue eyed and blonde haired. So, you know, good luck and straight.
Yeah.
But, you know, the good thing out of that, it was a very expensive lesson, but it woke her up from the left. And she was, you know, she's a recovered leftist. And now she's a, you know, conservative. But the thing is that all of these degrees, we have the data. We know what jobs are going to be needed in the future. We have massive need for electricians, for plumbers, for HVAC repairmen, for pipe fitters and welders.
Even truckers, even drivers of trucks.
Right. Although on the issue of truckers, you know, most people don't know this, but the majority of truck drivers are self-employed. They're
yes,
independent
they
owner-operator truck drivers, and they're getting raked over the coals by all of these regulations and fees. And then on top of that, the insurance that they have to carry. And then on top of that, you've got brokers that are double brokering. I mean, don't get me started there. That's one of the areas, one of the groups that endorsed me is the Truckers National Owner-Operators Association, which I did not ask for their endorsement, but I actually sat down and listened to them and did a three-hour session of talking to their leadership about, you know, brainstorming on ideas of what I could do if I got into Congress to try to help. And they were so impressed with that they gave me their endorsement without me even asking for it.
Let's go into your campaign.
We're getting way off track here.
because we've been given our 5-minute warning. Now we've gotten our 3-minute warning. And so I do want to make sure that we give you enough time to talk about your campaign and how people can help support
and
you
in your
campaign.
And what your platform is too, if you could just summarize it, you know.
Sure. So you know, my platform is basically based on three things. One is I absolutely am very much concerned with national security. That is the background of my entire career, 27 years in cybersecurity. Like I said, I've been working for all those different federal agencies and working for the military for the majority of it. I'm concerned at the status and the, you know, the strength of our military right now. It's the weakest I've ever seen in my life. A recent Heritage .org report showed that the United States Air Force, for example, was very weak on all four categories that they review. The Navy, I think, was very weak on two of them and weak on the other two. Army was, I think, moderately weak on everything. And the only thing that was strong on everything was the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. But the Marine Corps does not have a two-front war mission. And so right now we are one-third understrength for our military. That means that if we had to fight a two-front war, we don't have enough men to do it. Then on top of that, we're not building new ships, we're not building new planes, we're not keeping up with technology against our enemies. You know, we're not doing a lot of things. We're not building new bridges, we're not building new roads. Infrastructure for our country is just crumbling. And at the same time, we're sending hundreds of billions of dollars overseas to places like the Ukraine to fund these forever proxy wars. You know, it used to be forever wars in the Middle East, now it's forever wars you know, in Europe, although it looks like we're about ready to get involved in forever wars in the Middle East all over again.
Yep.
It's never ending. And who benefits from these?
Oh, a little country in the Middle East.
It's the military industrial complex.
Yes.
And who Eisenhower warned us against.
Yep.
They're the ones who benefit.
Yep.
When we give, and I'm all for supporting Israel, don't get me wrong. I believe, as a Christian, I believe it is a necessity for us to support Israel. But
I support people.
What I don't like seeing is there's very little accountability. We will give them a massive aid package, and the whole point of that massive aid package, they have to turn around, they got to spend that money buying arms from the U.S.
Yep.
And that's the requirement.
It's a circle.
It is, and that is exactly what Eisenhower warned against, mm-hmm. that having that sort of people involved in American foreign policy would lead us into forever wars where there would be no motivation whatsoever to sue for peace. So the military is an issue. Our border is a massive issue. I mean, you know, I don't even need to say anything about that. Everybody knows that that's a problem, and we've got to close the border. We need a reasonable plan for repatriating people back to their countries, or for at least making them leave this country and go to a point of origin or a port of origin, and go back through the process to come in the right way. But the easiest way to solve our immigration problem, I think, is to start with the low-hanging fruit. Anybody who gets arrested for a felony or a drug crime or a sex crime, or a violent crime, who is not an American citizen, and we definitely know when they go to jail, we find out. They should do their time and immediately be deported and never allowed back.
I don't even think that they should have to do their time, because taxpayers have to pay for that.
That's true. But we would need agreements with these other countries. I mean, honestly, you know, if somebody's look, I'm all for the death penalty. You know, if somebody's a violent, a felon, if somebody murdered somebody, put them to death. That's the easiest way, the safest way, the most cost effective way to deal with murderers. And if they're a foreigner, the same should hold true. But the thing that I look at it is like when you got to go after the low hanging fruit first. You got to get those guys out of this country.
Yeah.
Then the next step is you get out of the country the people who are here that are just basically sucking on the tit of the federal government and that are not doing anything to work hard, not doing anything to, you know, to take care of themselves. And those people should be the next group of people that are dealt with and removed, because we know who they are, because they come in and they get our assistance.
Yep.
And so those people should be rounded up. And they should be told, you have to leave the country because you are not self-sufficient. And even if then last group of people that you deal with, the people who are not a problem, the people who actually are producing jobs, the people who are actually working hard, who have small businesses and things like that are here illegally. And what you do with them is
put
you
them
say,
in
look,
the front of the line.
You got it. Well, yeah. So what you do is you say you have a year to come up with a plan to exit the country, go to a port of entry. We will fast track you back into the country, since you already have a job, you already have a family, you already have establishment here, and you're not, you know, causing problems for our country. However, you're going to register, you're going to do it the right way, you're going to pay a fine, and your time that you have to wait to become an American citizen has to be extended to twice the amount of time. And the reason I think that's a necessity is because all of those people who are waiting patiently to get into this country legally, they should not be able to get their citizenship before those people. And so I think that's only fair. And if they don't want that, then they can leave the country and start at the back of the line. And that's the way I see it. I think all of those measures done in the proper order, I think you could get, some Democrats and some, some moderate Republicans on board with it. But that's
what
we have to do.
Because it's kind. It's the right thing
it
to
is.
Do. That's a kind
it's
thing.
It's a compassionate approach.
Yeah.
But it's a compassionate approach that does require adherence to the law. Then the other thing that has to happen, and by the way, you make it so that you have 1 year to come forward and let us know who you are. If you're caught after that year, you're immediately kicked out of the country. No trial, no hearing. You're kicked out of the country and you'll never be allowed back ever. That's the way we've got to do it. You come forward, you let us know who you are, you register and come up with your plan to exit within a year. And then after a period of time, we're going to cut off that amnesty period, if you call it. I don't want to say amnesty, but basically, we're gonna cut off that period of time and say, now if you get caught now, you're forever out of here and you'll never come back. We don't care if you got family here, you're never coming back. It's got to be strong. It's got to be firm. And the other thing that we got to do is we got a massive problem in our border with drug trafficking, fentanyl. We had 100,000 people plus last year that were killed due to overdoses of
genocide.
Fentanyl. That's more than we lost in two Vietnam wars, which was 3 years long.
Yep.
In 1 year, we lost, you know, twice the amount of people we lost in Vietnam. And when you think about this, it's the leading cause of death right now between 18 and 45-year-olds. This is an epidemic. Yep. This is a pandemic. If there was anything, you know, COVID is nothing compared to what fentanyl has done to people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because it doesn't just destroy people's lives and death, but it destroys families. It's causing mass incarceration. There's all kinds of problems. We have 7,000 children in the system here in West Virginia due to mostly their parents being involved in drugs.
Yep.
So, and you've got multiple generations, and we've got to stop this scourge. Mm-hmm. And it is 100% coming from the border. China is giving on, they're supplying all of the precursor chemicals to the cartels directly. We need to, you know, put an embargo on China, as far as I'm concerned. These countries and these companies that are participating in this, we absolutely need to use every tool at our disposal to stop them. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the cartels who have been entering into our country armed to the teeth, we need to send our military down on the border, and we need to work with Mexico to come up with a plan to wipe out the cartels.
Well,
and if
thank
Mexico...
you, Nate, for coming on with us. Can you give people your website?
Sure.
And what you need quickly to support
win.
You?
To win.
So
let's
my
get
website,
you a win.
It is NateCain4WV.com. That's NateCain, the number 4, WV.com. If people go to that webpage, they can find out where I stand on all the issues. I have all of that published. Also, the other thing that people can do that would really help my campaign is donate to it. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't live in West Virginia, you can donate to my campaign. And the fact is that, yes, while I am representing the people of West Virginia, I'm also representing every American when I defend our Constitution. And I am a constitutionalist. And the fact is I'm running my campaign as a grassroots, candidate. I am not taking money from any of the PACs, any of the super PACs, any of the corporate PACs. Right. Every dollar that has come into my campaign has come from individual donors like you and your listeners. And so if people will commit to making even a small donation to my campaign, it will help me get over, you know, this last hurdle of the last 4 months, because this state is a 100%. It is going to be determined in the primary, because we are a 3-1 Republican state. Mm-hmm. I'm running up against 4 other guys. And I don't have anything, you know, against these other guys. I think they're decent guys, but none of them have the experience that I have in regards to going up against the deep state and staying alive. Not only that, but also none of them have the experiences that I do in cybersecurity, which I think is going to play a pivotal role in our national security in the next decade. And none of them have the level of experience that I have with national security, which is going to be critically important. And so I think
you're not
that,
bought off.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not.
And
no.
You're not bought off by super PACs and this and that. So
absolutely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Nate Cain, for running. Thank you for coming on with us today and sharing your story. And we look forward to talking with you soon.
Soon, yes.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
God bless.
God bless.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know what's going on. You guys, Nicole's over here like cracking up laughing and like laughing so hard she's like trying not to laugh, and I have no idea why. Like,
because
what is going on
I
right
now?
I
saw the word well, and I always think where you don't like the word well, so I thought I'd start off with well.
Really? So you just, okay, so let me get this straight. You just saw something that cracked yourself up so much that like you can hardly breathe right now. And it was, well, and I didn't even get it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, because if you guys should know, so I'm not a script person, and I'm also not a public speaker. I'm not so many things. I just show up and do my best. And Nicole is like definitely the script person. She's like, well, you helped plan the show, but you didn't put this sentence in this sentence. I'm like, well, isn't that kind of a given? And I realized, no. Nicole wants to read it word for word. Me, if I had to read it word for word, I would just sit here like this.
So I just saw the word well, and I thought, am I going to use the word well this time? And it made me laugh. I don't know.
She's missed me, I think.
Yeah, it made me laugh. So this is the part of our show we call our weekly word of encouragement, where we do take a minute or two to reflect back and share what God has been doing in our lives. Before we share, please go to subscribe right now. Go subscribe to
Act 333.
The verse is marked out there for you.
Yeah, I got it.
Act 33.
Yeah, go to theflameusa.com and do Act 333 and get that paper out. It's so simple. It's at theflameusa.com, and it's as simple as clicking the subscribe button. So today our verse is John 10:9-10, and this is in the King James Version. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. Yes, abundantly.
I'm gonna interject real quick.
Go for it.
I've been just teaching our small group on how to interpret the Bible and then translations. And when you realize that actually word is not a door, it's a gate. And the reason why you know it's gate is because the rest of it talks about a pasture. So they don't have doors to pastures, they have gates. And so the translator used door. I get the idea. And I've quoted that, the door is narrow. But it's actually gate, because I looked up the original text.
I saw gate while I was looking up this text.
Yeah, and it's because its gate is opening to a pasture. And you think about that God is saying, I'm giving you this beautiful pasture to go into, and you're my sheep, and I'm your shepherd. So it's a very, very, and then he says, I give you an abundant life. So think about this. You're over here on this side of the gate, and it's just the stall. It's the dirt and the grains thrown in there, and you're going, bah, bah, there's the green grass. And then all of a sudden, God opens up the door through Christ, and he's the gateway so that we can go through, and we can have an abundant life filled with hope and joy and peace and patience and kindness and gentleness and compassion. And that's the opposite what the world wants, which is war and anger division. We need to stop that, because people need to come to Jesus.
We just need to stop it already.
We do.
Love each other.
We
so,
do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It reminds me of a portal in a realm. So I could go to a Star Wars archetype with that. But Anna, welcome back.
Yes.
She's tan. I'm not.
Yeah, I noticed she was tan.
Everybody says that I don't even feel very
she
tan.
She went to
like
Hawaii.
When I look at you guys, I don't feel like I'm super tan, but hey, thanks. I'll take it. Oh gosh, does this verse affect my week? You know, I just think that overwhelmingly, like, God is just so good all the time. And, you know, I was just saying, because I'm not feeling well, how, you know, I want to be so grateful to be here right now. You know what I mean? Like, I haven't been here in 2 weeks. I've missed it so much. And then I get up this morning and I'm like, how am I going to do this day? Right. And you just like push through. But through that, just, you know, knowing that I want to be grateful, knowing that I should be grateful, and yes, that I am pushing through, just shows that, I want to be Christ-like. And
me too.
I just so want to be Christ-like.
I was excited to see you, and then I got mad at you.
I know.
But I'm just like, dude, I've been doing as much as I can, so I'm at that limit where I can't think one more thing differently. But the thing is when I woke up, because I had layout this morning, right?
Yeah.
And when I woke up, I thought, I'm excited to see Steve and Anna and be here. So just know my heart.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, that's just it. And you know, even just walking through so many changes, I feel like, I feel like this month has been overwhelming with changes. And, And, you know, part of it makes me want to cry. And then the other part is that that God is so good and he knows. You know what I mean? And so just to stand firm and know that, yes, he has that pastor for me. And I do get to walk through that gate every day if I choose. And, you know, when I close my eyes and I think about realms, I always see myself like in this, like, just like pure white dress. I know I've shared this with you, Nicole, in this pure white dress and just like this huge field that's never ending with massive white flowers and, just this bright blue sky, and it's just beautiful, right? And anytime I'm with God, we're dancing. We're always dancing. Like, I need to take dancing lessons because I need to learn how to ballroom dance or something. Because
that'd be fun. Let's all do it together.
Yeah, because definitely me and God dance a lot. And so I just
and you could do that now. It's not like you have to wait to go to heaven. You're here now. We get to dance today.
Yes. Amen. So, you know, that's what I think about. If we, you know, if we stay in the stall and we stay hidden and we stay afraid and we stay scared and we stay in the pit that we are just familiar with, we don't get to grow in him. And he's so amazing, even when we don't know. Like today, I feel like there's so many unanswered things in my life right now, but I know he's got it. Like, mm-hmm. I truly, even when I'm in the moment of worrying about it, I'm like, nope, don't worry about it. It's already finished.
He
it's
said,
already
don't worry.
Done. He said, don't worry. And I just move on to the next thing. You know, mm-hmm. I told Nicole yesterday, we went to a meeting and I'm like, I don't know if I realized like it was getting sick. I'm like, I feel depressed today. Like, I don't ever feel depressed. I'm like, not depressed, like in a weird way that you have to worry about me, but I'm kind of feeling depressed. And then I realized, no, you're just not feeling well physically.
Right, you're tired.
And my mental has to catch mm-hmm. up. And like, no, I am well. I'm excited. Like right now, I'm so well. Even just having a conversation about God and what a blessing he is, I'm like, I feel 1,000 times better in this moment. So, yeah, that's how God's affecting me this week. I missed being here. I missed being home. I missed, you know, just answering emails, talking to people. Because even though I could, you know, send a quick text and answer a question, it wasn't, you know, being on the phone and actually having conversation. So I'm glad to be back. And I can't wait until next week's show.
And all I have to say is, you know, change is hard. And it has been a lot of change this month for me, too. And it's sad, and I get that way, but there's so much to do, you don't even have time to be sad. Yeah. But the thing is clouds move. Everything changes. Yeah. Everything is always changed. Mm-hmm. Everything is constantly in motion. And when you could just sit in that motion and watch it, I don't mean to sound all Eckhart Tolle-ish or whatever, but the point is you're watching. You know, you just sit and it is what it is. Anna always says.
And you walk through it. That's just, the other thing.
You
is,
keep walking
is
through.
You get to sit for a minute.
Yeah.
But you got to just get up and go.
That's right.
You got to get up and go.
And you just do the best you can. So, and God, the thing is trust. It's all about, Anna's really good at trusting God. Mm-hmm. And I've been a little more of the forceful pusher of the universe and God and Jesus and, hey, you know, my way instead of thy way. And this week, a lot of it's been about letting go of that, too. So we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses. And this is the time that
so
we are
nearing the end of our show.
And we like to say, no, I wanted to thank you for listening to the Flame Podcast. I am reading a script, but it keeps me on track. We want to thank Sam Tram. I know we want to.
Nate Kane.
That's what happens with a script. You know, we want to thank everybody here. And Nate, you're awesome. Go to his website. And please go to theflameusa.com and check us out. And so as I like to say, or she likes to say.
I always end it. So as we like to say, I'm Anna King.
I'm Nicole Orozco.
And I'm Steve, the producer, Johan, reminding you to keep your tinder dry, your torch lit, as together with God's help, and we need God's help, we're spreading the truth like wildfire.
Wildfire.